Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
So question and answers, that's what's going on today. We're playing with this format, so we're going to change it up just a little bit. So we're going to take a question, we're going to answer it, and Reese, I'll throw one at you, 60 seconds. Joe, you've got 60 seconds to finish up anything he didn't say. I can finish up at the end, or I can say I'll open up, but we got to get this done quickly because I want to get to as many questions as possible. We had a list of questions we didn't get to last week. So, okay. Reese Cannella, Joe Flanagan, Don Williams, Chris Cousins is in the background. Thanks, Chris. We're all former college coaches. We're here to answer your questions. First one, boys. Let's see. Unknown person, but the question is, do college coaches put a lot of stock in player rankings on certain platforms? Then he says that parents have to pay a membership to join and see the information. What is that? First of all, what is that? Joe, what do you
think? I don't think so. I never did that myself. I think it's coaches want to see players play, you know, no matter the ranking or not. They need to see them play live and see if they fit into their system or not.
Right on. Reese, do you know what he's talking about? Do you know what this question is? What do you say? Anything to add to that?
Yeah, as a coach, I didn't look at player rankings. I think you know, that's may have stemmed from sports like football, like basketball, where, you know, you're talking about 4-star recruits, 5-star recruits. For me,
yeah, in my consensus coaches, is I agree. Yeah. That's, so we have a 3-way consensus, folks, from 3 coaches that paying money to put your kids on a rankings membership thing is probably not worth it. Okay.
Don, all right, next question. Can I add to that, Don?
Cisco De Juan. Oh, yeah, Chris, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I just really, really, really quickly. Sorry, I haven't got my video on. Do you remember we did the podcast with the Top Draw Soccer guy? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He kind of told us a little bit about that. Is there anything you want to quickly, can you remember and recap anything from that interview?
I don't remember, man. That was a long time ago. It's like almost 2 years ago. And okay, I'll disappear into the back. Not to be rude, I wasn't that interested. None of that's ever been interesting to me as a college coach. So that was probably somebody listened to that and said, you sounded like you were disinterested. And I said, yeah, kind of, because I kind of am.
There we go. There's the concept.
That's the way I feel. Do you remember what he said?
No, that's what I was asking you.
Well, you were there too. You interviewed him with me. So he impressed you just as much as he impressed me.
Yeah. I think the consensus is the rankings mean absolutely nothing. There we go.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Reese hit it on the head. It's a carryover from basketball and baseball and all the other sports where we do rank football like that. Okay. Francisco De Juan, my son is a senior in high school, 05. He lives and plays in Puerto Rico, so doesn't get much exposure except for a few ID camps. Considering a gap year in Spain, is to up his game and also to get more film for him. Is that enough to get his profile out there after? In parenthesis, enough on the pitch. He knows there's a lot more to it, 3.7 GPA-ish. So we got a bit of a run-on sentence. Can you digest what you can out of that, Reese? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it would be beneficial to him. You know, we know college coaches that go over to Spain. We obviously have a connection with Malaga FC, and so they're going to get exposure there, film on them. And we know that college coaches, we've had players that have been scouted and recruited from Spain. So, you know, you've got to be in a place where college coaches go to recruit. That's America, that's England, that's Italy, that's Spain, you know, Europe, South America. But that's a place where college coaches rely on to go and recruit.
Right. What do you think, Joe? What's your advice for this young man? Lives in Puerto Rico. How does he get exposure to coaches? Maybe he should take a gap year. 3.7 GPA. What's the kid got to do?
I mean, a gap year is not a bad thing. I think another year to grow as well. But, you know, getting on the radar of these college coaches is obviously the most important thing. And Spain could be a good thing, but it could be a roll of dice as well. So maybe even come into the United States. I mean, he's an 05. He could still play another year of probably MLS Next or ECNL. I know that. So there's a couple options there that could get him on the radar for sure.
So what we've seen in our gap year, we've had players go to Malaga City. SRUSA has an academy there where the kids are trained up for the year and everything they need to know about college and make sure that everything's up to date. So somebody's on-site advice. You got that. We've had players go to – I've got a player at a German academy this year. That's actually not a gap year. He's still in high school. We had a kid go to Indiana Fire last year. I think it's we had Mati also. We had a kid named Mati that went over to Spain, Malaga City. We've had quite a few that have used that. So there's a lot of things you can do for your gap year. You just want to be able to be in and around college coaches. I understand that Puerto Rico might be tough. Like, so the answer is maybe the gap year is just a way to figure out how to get in front of college coaches, unless he wants to come over for high school. By the way, let me know. I've got some friends, Francisco. I got some friends that have some high schools here that you can go to and play, like boarding schools. So we can talk about that too. All right. David Aldridge asks, where are the different men's levels? D1s, D2, D3 He didn't say D3. He says, where are the men's different levels, D1, D2, et cetera, at in the recruiting process for 2024s? Where are they at, Joe?
D1s are still early, I think, in 2024s. Maybe they got a couple. They probably identified some kids, but they're definitely not done yet, I don't think. D2s maybe identifying kids at best right now for 2024.
No commitments, right?
No.
D3s? Reese, you're the D3 expert.
No, D3s, they will be casting their net out.
No commitments, though, right? No commitments.
No commitments.
Right?
They're trying to.
The exception is the big schools, right? Like the Amhersts and the NESCAC schools, the NUMACs, the high end academic schools in the country, Bates and the Bowdoin. They've committed to those kids. Now they're waiting to see the final transcripts and see if any kids withdraw. But those high academic schools are in high demand and they get filled earliest, even Ivy League, right? So when you look at the highest end academic schools in the country that also are a good level of soccer, you're going to find those might start filling up, but the openings will still come. Not for 24s yet. No, none of them. None of those levels. I would say anybody for 24. Right. Do you guys agree? Anybody would look at a good 24 right now, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, on the girls' side, you might find schools that say, sorry, we're done. You might. Stanford.
Somebody. Some of the top,
okay.
I would say I have top five schools for women, maybe. Close, but maybe not. They still are. So I bet you they're still looking for a couple.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. Okay. Next question, unknown person. Should you accept a preferred walk on spot just to be on an elite D1 soccer team? What do you think, Reese?
That is personal preference. Does the academics work for you? Does the location, the team, the
budget.
What
does preferred walk-on mean, Reese? What does it mean?
So the school wants you to walk on. You may get academic money. You may get low athletic money, athletic scholarship money. So, you know, they've made a commitment to you, but they're not going to commit a lot.
Basically a guaranteed roster spot and you get no money from us.
Yeah,
right.
I know some schools where they'll give you $1,500. That would be their version of a preferred walk-on. But yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
Oh, look, there's a lot of schools out there that have no, they don't, you cannot stack. So you have to pick the academic or the athletic, and they always give you more academic money than they give you athletic money. So it's still a preferred walk-on. So you could be a highly recruited person. You're in the plans. You are going to start for us, but you're a preferred walk-on. You're on no athletic money because we only have 4 athletic scholarships. We don't have that much money. Even if I gave you $1,000, what's that going to do for you? You don't, you're going to get more academic money. So that's my take on that. What do you think, Joe?
I think preferred walk-on spot, again, like Reese said, I think is like, it's a personal preference, because say it's your dream school. It's, you know, a school that you've been dreaming about forever and you want to be there, and it checks all those boxes academically, locations, coaching, the conference, whatever. And then you got to go earn your spot. And then, but you have to realize too, that a preferred walk-on, you're probably not going to play much your first year. So are you okay with that? And you have to be ready for those type of tough questions, and how important is playing right away for you? Because I do think it's difficult sometimes when you're a preferred walk-on, because some of the other, you might have seniors or juniors ahead of you. So I think that's the big thing. If it checks those boxes, I don't think it's a bad thing.
You know, and it depends on the school. That's the personal preference thing too. It's like, yeah, I'll sit the bench at Stanford because that was my dream school. I'm happy to sit the bench at Notre Dame because that's, look, I would be there no matter what. Like, that's where I want to go to school. That's where I am. I'm happy to sit the bench doing that. At least I'm part of something. Maybe I'll play eventually. But then you're not willing to do that at Alaska State or Wisconsin State. You're not willing to do that.
And again,
why would I do that for that?
And the one thing that's tough is when you start sitting the bench when you're, you know, 18, 19 years old, and you've never sat the bench before, it's different. So you have to kind of realize how much playing time does matter, because it does affect people in different ways.
Yeah, I have a feeling that pieces of this question will come up over and over again. So we're going to move on to the next question for now. I think we did a good job. Jennifer Serratos asks, what if your player is not getting any interest from the coaches she's reached out to? No school she's interested in has seen her play live, and we don't have great video. How do we help spark interest? Go on, Joe. Go on.
SRUSA, I guess. I would say, you know, you got it. It's difficult sometimes right now, especially during the season, for getting responses. Coaches are busy, whether they're, you know, games, traveling, different things are going on. So that's always the tough thing, that you're not always going to get. You want to get some type of feedback, and sometimes you don't get it, but you got to keep trying. And, you know, again, there's got obviously people out there like us that can help, but, and trying to get your video together, that's definitely if you're not in a place where coaches can come see you play easily, you got to get a good video.
Yeah. What do you think, Reese? So she's, just real quick. So she's reached out to a bunch of schools and nobody's reached out to her, or at least no school she's interested in have seen her play live. That's what she says. And we don't have great video.
Well, she has to get great video. That's going to be imperative. Maybe have to move team. The team might not be getting the exposure that she needs.
Hey, Reese, can you see this?
I
can. This is an iPhone. If I stood at the top of the bleachers with this over my head, that would do. It's good enough. Yeah. I've seen it. It's fine. It doesn't have to be perfect, but you do have to you have to get a little elevated view. We can't have the referee running in front of us and blocking what your goalkeeper does. And your goalkeeper just made a great save. It was blocked by four people at ground level. So you've got to at least get it above the crowd.
Yeah. Put your film on iMovie and cut it up and put a circle around
you. Not a big deal. Yeah.
Have to get video.
Yeah. Ben Peterson says, my daughter is a junior playing ECRL. So we got ECNL, and then we have ECNL Regional, which is the B team. And the high school season starts in late November. Is it better/more prudent to contact coaches now or wait till the college season is over? Would college coaches even look at emails or videos while they're in season? Is still a full in swing? Thank you. He leaves out a very important piece, boys. What year is your daughter? If she's a 2026, who cares? Or 2027, who cares? So he leaves that out. My daughter's a junior. There we go. So my daughter's a junior playing ECNL RL, and the high school season starts in late November. So we have a junior. What should she do? Contact coaches now in season, or wait till their season's over? What do you think, Joe? You coach Division II women at a very high level.
Yeah, definitely should contact now. I mean, the showcases and Thanksgiving tournaments are coming around the corner here. So there's definitely some time to be seen. If you're on a good RL team, you know, or a good player on an RL team, you know, I know some players that are at that level. And to me, if you're, you know, on the RL side of things, like if you're carrying a big load on that team and one of the better players and trying to make the impact on the game every time you step on the field, that's great. And that's the mentality you have to have to continue to improve. And maybe you get a chance to be seen, but yeah, I think you should be contacting coaches now and continue through.
Yeah. I think the master plan with the 24s right now is between now and January, come to an agreement that they're going to be able to see you at XYZ event. Come to that agreement that you're interesting to them and they want to spend time on you. And then you've got all spring and summer and to get that done. Right. At all those events. I think, what would you say, Reese? Does that sound like a reasonable plan for 2024s?
Yeah. I think you can contact them now. Coaches are looking at their emails. They might miss it because they're so busy, but they're looking at their emails, and then if they don't reply, you know, maybe email back in a month or two.
Yeah. I like that. Good advice, guys. All right. Laura Live says, how soon should a coach have a kid specialize in a soccer position? My kid is 11 and coach says he's very talented as a defender. You know, the reason I don't like this question, I didn't read it last week. It's not a college question, folks. You're asking a youth question. So the one rule that we're going to have, I think, in this right now, I don't want to get into youth questions. What do you think, guys? We can answer it, but I don't want to get into a lot of these youth league questions. What do you think, Joe? When should my kids specialize at 11?
I don't think they should specialize, but as a coach, I know that if that player is good, I'm going to put him in a place that's going to help me win. but you know, you want some of your better players to be able to play in a couple of different spots and see if he's a good striker, a good center mid, center back, goalkeeper, whatever. So it's not, you probably shouldn't be specializing, but I know what happens. And hopefully he or she's going to get opportunities to play it at different spots.
So we'll answer these questions. We're just not going to spend a lot of time on them. That's fine. Maybe that's the rules. This is always evolving. Okay, Michael Enrico says, we'll be moving from MLS Next to ECNL as a 16-year-old look bad to a college coach. How do you answer this when asked why I change clubs? So the kid wants to move from MLS Next to ECNL. He's 16 years old. The question is, how will this look to a college coach? Will it look bad? And how do I explain the fact that it sounds like I moved down? What do you think, Reese?
It depends if there is an MLS Next club team and ECNL team. For example, FC Dallas, right? They have both. But ultimately, you know, your son has to enjoy soccer. And so I'm assuming he's moving based on maybe he's not playing where he wants to play, maybe not getting the time. So, you know, you may have some explaining to do, but is it a move that is going to benefit your son, right? Is he going to play more than what he would at the MLS Next team? If he is, then ultimately you have to play and coaches want to see you play. So it's a move that you have to make. You may not get as much exposure, but is he going to get more minutes, which ultimately is the end goal, is to play.
Right. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I agree. I think the ECNL, I know that level pretty well. I have my son played at that level or plays at that level, and they get a good amount of college coaches. And I don't think you have to explain, you know, nobody's going to make a big deal about you changing clubs at 16, I don't think. And you know, unless there's a history there. And like Reese said, if you're going there and you're getting a better chance to more opportunity to play or play at the specific place or position you want to play in, I don't think there's anything bad about it at all.
So here's what I noticed. I noticed that when I went to Dallas Cup and then the same weekend, so I had a player on FC Dallas's ECNL team. So they were playing in Dallas Cup, and then the MLS Next teams were down the road in Frisco. And I noticed almost no big time. One day there was a break in the games, and here comes my son's former college coach from Georgetown, Indiana, and UConn strolling in to watch a game. I said, what are you guys doing here? And it's like, well, they took a break from MLS Next. We're going back there. So the kids, you know, the coaches, I think, are following heavily those. But I noticed, then I noticed, like, Wash U, so one of the best academic schools in the country, never left the fields at ECNRL. He wasn't even bothering to look over. So we have one of the highest top 15 academic schools in the nation. And then we've got, you know, at the ECNL games, but over at the other games, we've got all the big schools, Georgetown, everybody wants to go there. So that's just an observation. But I'll tell you this, Joe, when I've been asked, when I've told college coaches, I got a kid, but he's playing on the ECNL team, they go, yeah, we don't care. We don't care. It's a good level and we know it. It's a good level.
Yeah, if there's
we're happy to take a look.
If there's a direct conflict between the two, there might be a little issue, but there's such a there's enormous opportunity in both leagues to get seen because you're playing year round. So there's going to be different that you're going to be seen. And, you know, I've been to ECNL playoffs where there's 30 to 40 coaches on the sidelines. So they're both getting exposure because they're both, you know, year round. And like I said, there's plenty of opportunities to be seen.
Yeah, both good levels. Yeah, I agree. Laura Lives asks, when in high school, should video reels be put together or is junior year soon enough? What do you think, Reese? Do we want to see freshman and sophomore video? Doesn't say the guy's side or the girl's side, but what are your thoughts?
I think it doesn't hurt to film those games. There might be an overhead kick that you score and, you know, and you never do that again. I don't think it hurts, but you have to remember that sophomore year, junior year, you're going to be more experienced, probably going to be faster, stronger. You're going to be probably a leader on the team compared to a freshman. So get the film, but understand that you're probably going to have to get rid of some of those highlights. And hopefully, if you're progressing in the right way, you should be adding more highlights and better highlights to your
there we go
as you go through the years.
Yeah. What do you think, Joe?
I agree. I think, you know, it's good to have it as you go, freshman, sophomore year, beginning of sophomore year, but, you know, it's good to be updated, you know, your stuff as you go and as you, you know, as you get in that late sophomore year and sophomore summer, you know, that's the video.
So David Natwick asks, I know David. David, I think, I don't know, D license maybe I gave him. He was in my group, I think. Goalkeeper guy out of the Bay Area, really good guy. We're going to be doing some events together, goalkeeper events in the Bay Area this next summer. Look for that, everybody. With the high cost of education, is choosing a junior college a better choice than a four-year college? Can you outline the benefits for choosing a junior college and their soccer program versus a four-year soccer program? Guys, do you mind if I kind of start off with this one? Because I coached in junior college for 10 years. So I'll give you my point of view, and then I want to hear what you guys have to say. But there's an incredible value. A friend of mine, Jeff Beicher, went to, I think it was West Valley College or Evergreen, and then goes to Santa Clara and is in the Final Four and then gets drafted MLS, playing with Paul Bravo. So we've got, you know, American football stories, baseball stories, soccer stories. We can go on and on about players that have started at junior college and worked their way up to the pro ranks. We know it happens a lot. So we can't even really argue that part. It just happens. And then secondly, the first 2 years of any school, whether you're at Stanford or Harvard, you're all taking English 101 or History 101 or, you know, all the basics. You're all taking Anthropology 101. You're all taking, you know, the humanities, art appreciation, music appreciation. Whether you're at a junior college or Stanford or Harvard, doesn't matter. The first 2 years are all your basic general education anyways. So academically, you lose nothing. And then they're way cheaper, way cheaper. And you're 2 years older and more experienced. And if you've crushed it, I've had players go from junior college to Penn State University. So as just about, I had a girl on the girls' side go to Florida State. Okay, when they won the year they won the national title. So I've seen what can happen. I've seen that it's not just once. We have staff members that have done it themselves. Starting in Indiana, men's soccer, through the junior college system and saving money. So what do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I agree. There's always different pathways to get there. my only thing was I would think that most D1 school, like most top D1 schools, are going to want players for 3 or 4 years. That's you know, mostly they don't want a kid for two. They'll take a kid for 2 years, but they would prefer, you know, a 4 year kid. But that's really the only thing, I think, because there's in here in Southern California where I live, there's some great junior colleges that you know, I've recruited from a ton. But you know, again, some people like a 4 year experience better instead of being 2 years here, 2 years there. Again, it's a personal preference. But if soccer is your thing, the other thing too is that academically, sometimes it could be easier to transfer into a 4 year school like a UCLA or a big school as a transfer, because it's very hard sometimes as a freshman. So it's really up to the person, you know, personal preference. But the only negative
is pretty logical, Joe, why that is. And you think about it, there's a million kids trying to get into Stanford, literally freshmen, you know, trying to get in as freshmen. But at UCLA, same thing. By the end of the freshman year, some have dropped out. By the end of the sophomore year of that class, of that cohort, some has dropped out of each of those classes. There is room for some juniors to jump in at a lot of big end academic schools. There's a little bit of room. So you're right. Now you're only competing against all the kids trying to transfer. You're not competing against every senior in the world. Does that make right. sense to everybody?
Yeah.
So hold on. So Reese, what do you think about that? Junior college, thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you think?
Yeah, thumbs up. Financially, it makes sense.
I love it. Man keeps it brief. He's got it. Next question, anonymous. My daughter wants to play college soccer. She's a junior. I have no clue to where to start. Where do we start, Reese?
You watch this and you follow us on Twitter and Instagram and SRUSA and join our Facebook group, because we put a lot of free information out. A lot of free information, especially our Facebook group. I think, you know, we've got done like 8,000-9,000 in one group, another 5,000 in another. But, you know, we're a team of college coaches, all we played at college. And I think the amount of free information we just hand to parents and players is going to be beneficial.
And when you go to those groups, we have pin podcasts right at the top. If you listen to every one of those pin podcasts, every one of these questions would have been answered today in one of those podcasts, every single one of them in some form or another. Right, Joe? I mean, isn't that, I mean, what do we do? I would just got to have, because it's a depends. It's a depends. And whenever I say it's depends, it depends. My daughter wants to play in college soccer. She's a junior. So my answer is, it depends on how good she is. How good is she at soccer? Just because she's a junior playing soccer still in high school doesn't mean that she can play at the collegiate level. It's this idea that there's a place for everybody to play if there's enough college spots for everybody to play, which is a lie, because there's only 40,000 college roster spots in every division all across the country. There's not an unlimited number of roster spots. What do you think, Joe?
Correct. Obviously, talent and ability is a big part of it. But say that she is a college level player, you know, obviously you want to play on a good team. And then, like we said, we start taking those steps and putting a video together and getting some contacts going. And, you know, I always say that coaches are never going to, you know, turn away good players. Like good coaches aren't going to do that. So if they find a player their junior year or senior year, and they think that player can make an impact, they're going to figure out a way to get that player in. So,
all right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If you have ability and then you got to start, you know, working a little bit and you know, getting those contacts out there. And again, you know, like Reese said, there's a lot of information out there that we provide and that can help any.
All right. We got a question in a very specific. My daughter is a junior in high school. She plays on the top ECNL team, as well as played with the Puerto Rico youth national team. Many of her teammates are verbally committed to top D1 schools. Many of them have attended ID camps. I'm trying to understand what the benefit of camps are and when she plays on several showcases. So she says she's already going to all the showcases. She's already getting in front of all the coaches. She's already doing the video social media thing. She's doing all of that. She's doing website creation. Does she really have to go to camps on top of that? What else should she be doing? She's emailed and spoken to seven college coaches, but there doesn't seem to be many contacting her. So this girl's done everything right. She's on her Puerto Rican national team. She's done what ECNL has told her to do. She's joined ECNL. This should be automatic. All of her teammates are verbally committing, but she's not committing. She's a 2024. What else does she need to be doing? What do you think, Joe?
Like you said, it sounds like she's doing a lot of the good stuff right now, the right stuff. So, and you know, all that stuff with social media and website stuff, I think that's great, but you know, at some point you're going to need to have contact with those coaches. So I think maybe she needs to expand her college choices a little bit and look at other schools as opposed to the six or seven that she's been in contact with, if there's no real true, you know, offer or interest coming from there. So maybe she should look around and maybe there's other colleges out there that would be a right fit for her.
What do you think, Reese?
I think she should take the advice of what my mum said to me when I was like 8 or 9. I said, "Mum, I want to play for a football team." She's like, "Well, go and ask your mates then." You know, my mum didn't have the contact. She's like, "Go and ask your mates." So I go to school, ask my mates, "Oh, who do you play for?" "This team, we play here at this time." I played for a team called Sacred Heart, and that was that. And so what she's going to have to do is, she's got a great resume, you know, from the sounds of it. But what she's going to have to do is talk to her teammates and say, how did you get in contact? How are you verbally committed? What did the coach do? Did the coach come see you? Did they watch film? So instead of looking at those teammates and saying, "Oh, why are they verbally committed, but I'm not," use that to your advantage and say, "Okay, how did that happen?" I think that would be a good start, because again, she's in the right environment. She's playing, you know, national team. You're obviously playing at a good level. So she's in the right environment. I think she's doing all the right things. Like Joe said, you know, you need to be seen. You need the contacts. And so I would speak to teammates and just say, how did they navigate it? Because there's a missing link here. And from the face of it, there shouldn't be.
Yeah. And look, here's the reality. There's a lot of missing information from this. How good is she really? So we don't know. Right. And the bottom line is that I have seen girls that are in the right environment, on the right teams, on the biggest team names in the country, doing all of the right things. They're playing 10 minutes at the end of each half, and there's a noticeable difference between them and the other players. I've had clients like that, and they don't understand why their, you know, teammates are going D1 and committing early and they're not, when they train with the same players every day. They can play on the same team with them. I often hear these players say, "I'm just as good as them." Yeah, but you're playing the last 10, 15 minutes of every half, and you look like you're a different player than they are. You noticeably drop off in the level of play. And I've sat there with my clients in those environments and had college coaches at the Power 5 level and go, "Oh, that's your client? Yeah, not very good. Not very good." So, yeah, well, we're not targeting you guys, but I appreciate the feedback. It helps. It helps me understand what you're looking at in your conference. So my one caveat to all of that is, get your daughter assessed. Get her assessed. Somehow get her assessed by people who know what they're talking about, and get an objective opinion about where she should be. You know, and sometimes club coaches are very objective, and sometimes it's hard for them to be objective. And sometimes it's hard for club college directors to be objective. It's hard, because you're also our customer, and we don't want to upset you. Not there's anything nefarious behind it. We just don't like to upset people. We don't. Most people don't like to upset people. Okay. Get assessed.
Don, I think the other side too is ID camp. Sometimes you don't get a great evaluation there either. So you see a lot of ID camps where everybody gets a great evaluation. We all know that they're all not, you know, top of the line players. So, you know, that correct assessment is important.
Right, right. She has a little short follow-up here. I have people telling me she needs to hurry, otherwise money and spots will be filled. What do you think, Joe? What's the story?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's, again, it depends on what you're looking at. Those Power 5 type conferences, those top teams, they might be, you know, getting commitments and that type of stuff. But again, is your dream to play at a good school? Is your dream to get money at a good school? Like, there's all these different factors you got to look at. And again, we had that person earlier that asked a question about, you know, getting a roster spot. If you're getting a roster spot and you're not getting money, that might be good enough. So it just kind of depends on that athlete, I think, because you don't want to settle, but you don't want to wait around and all those opportunities are gone either. So you got to find that medium somewhere.
Well, then there's also a difference that a walk-on spot at Baylor is going to cost you $52,000, but a walk-on spot at Cal State East Bay is only going to cost you $21,000.
Right.
So you have this difference in what a walk-on spot costs you out of school, no matter how good your grades are. It's probably 4.0, $52,000 at Baylor, because I think it's $82,000 to start with. So they're already discounting it by more than a third. Just because of your good grades, but it's not free. Teachers cost money. So I think players have to answer that question and do what's the value here in this whole thing? What are we trying to accomplish? So there's a lot more. This is a deep one. This is what we get into with our clients, Joe and Reese. We have these deep discussions that take hours sometimes with clients to get to the root of what the right fit looks like. Kevin Sherry, do you guys know Kevin? Kevin coached at Louisiana Tech. Hey, thanks, Kevin, for listening, man. Appreciate it. He says, how much has the transfer portal affected recruiting? Like, he doesn't know, but he wants to say our opinion. Well, how has the transfer portal affected recruiting, Reese?
We touched on it last year, and it's impacted recruiting a lot in that now, say, for a high schooler, you're now competing with players who been through the recruiting process. They've been on campus. They've done the homesickness. They understand time management. They understand going to classes and keeping their grades. So, you know, the coaches look at that, and it's impacted, you know, recruits who are going up to college. It's impacted them. And I think it's impacted coaches in that if you have a player who isn't getting time, they're like, all right, well, I'm going to leave. And so it's impacted coaches. So it's impacted everyone. It's here to stay. I know they're changing the rules, or they've changed the rules, but they, you know, the players and, you know, NCAA say it's a epidemic, I think. I mean, you're seeing it in big time college football. You're seeing it in big time basketball, and it trickles down to all sports. So it's impacted everyone, coaches, players, and it's here to stay. So you just have to navigate it.
Yeah. We're just discussing this today. So it used to be that a coach literally could not sign and could block your transfer. And then you had to appeal it and you had to appeal it. It was so much work and created so much bad blood with a lot of coaches to transfer that players just sucked it up. And they just sat, they didn't worry about it. They didn't transfer. The transfer portal now says coach doesn't even have to know about it. You can just go to your compliance director, say, put me in the portal. Next day you're in the portal. That's it. I don't recommend, by the way, that you don't talk to your coaches about a transfer. You'd have to be pretty foolish. I mean, you got to know other coaches are going to call them, right? So how's it affected recruiting, Joe?
Well, it's impacted. I mean, it's still fun, you know, we're still finding out because it's changing every year, the different stuff that's going on. And so it's going to impact it, you know, incoming freshmen, you know, the spots that are available. College coaches are now maybe holding a couple spots out for a couple transfers, possibly, you know, some players that like a specialized goalkeeper or striker, a certain position that they're in total need of. They want a quick fix, so they're going to want to transfer. But I know as a coach for myself, I want to build a team through a nucleus of players that I bring in. That's not going to be these quick fixes all the time. So there's going to be a little bit of both. And I do think it could push the recruiting calendar around a little bit. Like, instead of people committing early, those offers might be delayed a little bit. So the dust hasn't settled yet. I think we're still figuring that out.
Well, there's a couple things that happen in March. It's like a big magic month. All the pro players from Europe find out they're not getting a contract. They're turning 18 years old. The pro club will no longer support them in any way. So you can gut it out here at the reserves, and maybe, probably, we know who you are. And these guys are deciding to go to the United States, right? And it happens on the women's side. It happens on the men's side. And it's a growing phenomenon. So we know that coaches are holding out money. the smart ones, because they're waiting for these kids to get released. So they have to hold out something there. So they're already got some kind of reserves. And I do know college coaches that solely shop the portal. That's where they fill their team from. I do know those coaches. How sustainable is that? How accurate is that? How what kind of a model is that? That we can debate that all day long. But I know what's going on. And I know that coaches will shop because I'm talking to them. I'm hoping to pick up a transfer player. These are people I'm very close to, hoping to pick up an older transfer player.
Yeah. And there's
big time schools.
And colleges are on that portal every single day. That's what they tell me, the college, the coaches.
Plus JC that doesn't show up on there. Plus NAIA that doesn't show up on there. Doesn't show up.
They check their emails in the portal.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's, I would say it's made a significant, so the question is, significant? Yes, significant.
Yes.
Yep.
It's changed the face of college recruiting.
For sure.
And it will only get bigger. I have starters, players that are starting at a level they shouldn't be starting at, now talking about wanting to transfer. They're exactly at the right level for them. And they talk about wanting to transfer because now you have dreams of Indiana picking you up. Because you were the starting goalkeeper for a 6-win NAIA school. Transfer, the idea of transfer. All right. Yeah. Well, we have no more questions. Chris, no more questions? Did we run out?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, sorry. That's it. I mean, is there anything you want to put, any sort of advice you want to give yourself? Anything that's come up recently this week, people would find useful.
Okay, so if you can think of something, who's got one off the top of their head? Joe Reese, something that happened this week—a little anecdote, a little story, a little something out of your life that we can inspire somebody with. Come on, something or encourage or.
Well, I think I put a tweet out earlier, actually yesterday, and I just listed, and this isn't everything, but I listed, you know, what a coach does to show interest in you being the player. And, you know, I kind of put it out there again today for coaches to add to that. But I had a list of, you know, the things that coaches are doing to show interest. And, you know, I got a lot of good responses. And so that was based off of one of my players who, you know, was getting those sort of interests. You know, he was getting coaches talking to him. Asking for his schedule, inviting him to campus. And so, yeah, it was on the male side. And so, you know, that was just something where I was like, we have a lot of players say, hey, I want to go D1 and, oh, I want to go here, I want to go there. And if the interest isn't being reciprocated, then, you know, you may have to look elsewhere. So,
look, I get shut out at certain levels on certain days on certain players. But I will tell you this, when we had Max Broughton going out there, there wasn't a coach in the country that didn't suddenly know my name and have my phone number. You know, when we've got kids at Indiana, when we've got kids that are at the higher levels, like, oh yeah, no, this is the kid I want. And so it's not that we, and this is why Chris always says, it's the marketplace, at least with an SRUSA client, it's the marketplace that will end up determining where you're, what level you should be playing them at. It's not us, because it's not like we can't get a hold of those guys because we've got players playing on those teams. So it's how good are you? What do you, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, I think patience is a key to all this stuff. I think asking questions and figuring things out, what, you know, again, we're talking about right now how the transfer portal has changed the landscape of recruiting. And it's going to continually change. And I think that what we were talking about, or Don, maybe what you were talking about 3 years ago, is probably completely obsolete at this point in time. Things are changing. So like, if you hear that, oh, the Division I's are done or blah, 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 you're like, well, that's maybe not true anymore. They're waiting for transfers. They're waiting for maybe these internationals, whatever. So there's opportunity there. Patience is key. I think knowledge and asking questions is key. And I think what Reese said is key as well. It's like, what is recruiting, getting recruited? What does that mean? Are you having contact with that coach? Is it just a blanket email that you're getting, or are you actually having discussion, and are they talking about bringing in for a visit? you know, stuff like that, not just invite you to ID camp. So like real true interest, I think is important too, because if you're not getting that right now, you're a senior or something, like, okay, maybe you got to broaden those horizons again and start looking elsewhere and looking at other things and having a backup plan. You can't.
Well, Joe, what do you think if we look at this maybe like a relationship, right? Because I always thought of this as a relationship. I always said, I'm bringing you into my family. You know, these kids that are coming into our family can destroy our family culture or can help our family culture. So that's the way I always looked at it. And I think a lot of college coaches in this country look at it like that. So you how do you then consider that a relationship is built? Can you do it on email only? Can you do it on text only? I don't think so, right? At some point, right. And I think interest probably can be described, what do you think, Joe, as when human interaction begins, when that coach starts spending time on you on a one-on-one level, that's when the recruiting process begins, right?
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
And everything short of that is only communication.
Yeah, and the sad thing is sometimes,
it's not relationship building.
Yeah, and the sad thing is sometimes...
And I know how this works, right? What is it called? Is it Tinder, where they slide right and slide left?
Right.
So, you know, you've got this big pool.
Don, your internet's playing up a little bit, buddy. He's frozen anyway. What are you going to say, Joe? I interrupted you before.
I was just saying, like, sometimes, you know, ID camps are the big thing now. And, you know, sometimes you got to do it a little bit and go to an ID camp here or there. But just because you're good and you get invited to an ID camp doesn't mean you're actually getting recruited. So you got to be, to me, strategic in the ID camps you go to and not just go to everyone under the sun and expect to get all these great emails and this great interest. So that's what I was just saying about the ID camp stuff is, and recruiting, it's like get invited to ID camp is not necessarily recruiting. It's an opportunity, but it's not like, you know, there could be 100 kids there and they're not recruiting 100 kids. So you have to keep that.
We could talk about an hour for about the ID camp stuff. I mean, it's been the number one thing on my mind this week. A lot of my clients, the domestic kids, not a lot of them, but a few of them, the schools are interested in. Schools are saying to me, yeah, really interested in him, X player. Can they come to an ID camp? And then the parents are saying to us, are they just trying to get money out of us, Chris? And then it's usual, like, it's just a whole, like, I usually look after international kids. So ID camps is not a thing. So like, it's not really ever, we'd have to cross that bridge. But if a coach likes a player, they like the player and they make an offer. But with the US kids, it's kind of like an easy, I don't know. I'm split between telling them like, yeah, they're making money off you versus, I mean, I can see why they actually do it as well, because I would like to see a person on my campus with my team, with my staff. So yeah, I mean, we could talk about that one, but just to add to the ID camp stuff, it's kind of been bothering me a little bit this week.
Yeah, no, I think if you go to an ID camp, like on a specific campus, I think there's definitely some advantage to that, because you can view yourself as the player and the parent, maybe go check out the campus and check, you know, see what it's like. And do you like the area? Do you like the whole feel of the campus? I think there's a lot of positives to that, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're getting recruited there. That's all.
I'll just to give you one example. I've got a player who really wants to go to this certain school. They say they really like him. He's actually injured. It's the only ID camp they've got. So they're kind of like, well, we're not sure if we want to move forward with him, but then I know he's good enough for that. It's like, it's obviously, I've got to do my job better, basically. But that's where we're at with the ID camp thing this week, just to kind of let everyone know.
Oh, it's a common thing. But there's two kinds of ID camps. There's one where you're walking in almost cold and you're one of 100 campers, as opposed to in that group, and you'll almost always go to a camp and know who they are. The coach will group these kids together. So they've kind of been pre-seen. They've kind of already know who these kids are. And then they want to see the better kids play against the better kids. Not that they won't move kids from group to group, but they're hand-picking the ones that they move from group to group. So, I mean, at least that's the way I always ran an ID camp. Did you do it any differently, Joe?
No, I mean, for me, obviously, the biggest camp that I probably had was about 40 kids for an IA camp. Most of the time it was about 20. So we would know a couple of them, like you said, and you group the ones you kind of maybe seen before and put those ones together on a team or against each other or whatever. So, you know, that's where it's hard when you, all these, say you're as a player, you're playing ECNL or MLS Next, or you're playing at a good level. There's a lot of games to be seen. You go down to E-Camp and there's 100 kids there. You're kind of in this ocean of players all over again. And what kind of opportunity do you have to get there all over again?
And if it's a Stanford camp, 1,000 kids, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, how to get seen and get on the radar in that environment, unless you're messy, you know, it's going to be difficult.
7 bicycle kicks, 4 diving headers. Somebody's going to see 2 of them.
Yeah, a couple of nutmegs maybe.
Yes. No, you got to stand out, right? I'm just as it always was. This, I was voted top player at the Stanford camp, but yet Stanford didn't talk to me. So right. Where, because if you're a junior, they can just pull you aside at a camp, right? So as soon as you graduate that sophomore year, June 15th, they can just yank you aside at a camp, right? And go, hey, where are you going? What's it going to take to have you come here?
Right.
We want you. They can do that at a camp. So if they don't do that at a camp, which a few coaches don't, a few coaches do it like this formalized posting of a roster list. They'll email everybody, but if they email you back in the first 2 or 3 days, they're serious. They'll go home.
Right.
So some coaches do it like that, but it's one of those two things, right? There's no in between, is there?
No, I don't think so. And I think that's if you don't get hearing back within the first week, I think that, you know, you have to kind of move on and look at your next option. You know, you can't, and this is where we come in. I think we're trying to take a more proactive approach to recruiting as opposed to kind of sitting around and hoping that somebody saw me here or hoping that somebody saw me there, or this ID camp, hopefully this coach saw me. And I think that this is where, you know, you can take a more proactive approach to educating yourself on the opportunities that are out there, outside the 4 or 5 schools that you maybe seen before or ID camps that you went to. So I think it's important to keep those options open and continue to look at those, you know, again, if you're not getting feedback, you got to start looking, okay, maybe they're not interested. I got to look elsewhere.
There you go. Well, we don't have to drag this out. So if you got no more questions from anybody, Chris, let's
no, but I was just going to, just to conclude on the ID camp thing, we have like a whole podcast episode about it. I think we recorded it last year. It's pretty good if I remember.
I think it's pinned to our Facebook group, which is to be found where, Chris? Where they can find our Facebook groups?
Just go to Facebook, obviously, and then just type in college soccer recruiting resources and find it that way. Or just go onto our social media, you'll find it at some point. Yeah, not very clear, I apologize, but I mean, if you go to like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just type in Inside College Soccer, that brings up all the episodes.
Perfect. Thanks, Chris. All right, Joe, thanks for joining us, man. I'll see you guys. So we've committed to 1 hour a week out of our lives to answer your questions. No question too tough. I can't think of a political question that we wouldn't answer. Just try to keep it around the world of college soccer. That's all, folks. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.